Okay. Yeah, this is a little funny. this is totally round two with Jess. Welcome back to All Good in the Brotherhood podcast. I'm joined today by a friend, special guest, Jess Smith. We actually had totally done this whole thing hours ago.
Yep.
And somehow I didn't save this whole file. So we're going again.
We're back.
I truly believe that God wants us to do it again.
Yeah.
So
and more there was to say.
Yeah, exactly. There's all more to say. There's always more to say about Jesus, right?
Right.
So Jess is a teacher at a school more in central Pennsylvania now.
Yes.
I got it wrong last time, so that works. At Catholic school,
yes.
Teaching math,
mm-hmm.
right, to
yep.
freshmen and sophomores, right?
Freshmen and juniors, yep.
Oh, okay.
Yep. So geometry and algebra one.
Fun times.
Stuff.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Are you enjoying that? Because I know you taught in a public school and not high school.
Right,
prior.
Right. So yeah, I was in a public middle school. So like a double whammy, but
yeah.
No, I love the high school so much. It's really great. And being in a Catholic school too is just amazing. Because then like, I don't know, you can integrate your faith
yeah.
in the classroom and it doesn't even have to be a religion class.
So. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
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 And that's, should be like the goal of our life is to integrate faith into all things.
Exactly.
And yeah, I mean, I do enjoy math, but I definitely don't think about it as like, okay, like this is an exercise of faith also, but
right.
you know, in ways it can be.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, that's awesome.
Good.
So Jess is here. Very excited to have her. And I'm always super excited when people have something they want to share on the podcast. Sometimes it's like, oh, I gotta find someone, gotta find something, right? But Jess reached out to me, which is really awesome, and just said, hey, I think there really needs to be more talked about in regards to the Eucharistic revival and the Eucharistic Congress. And she was there, so I'm like, well, why not you talk about it? Let's just dive
yeah.
into that then.
Yeah,
so
that sounds good.
You were in Indianapolis for
yes.
the Eucharistic Congress.
Yep.
How did that all happen? How did you get there?
Yeah.
What was the, yeah, what did it all look like?
So I guess it started, so we're in year three, which I didn't know about. So 2 years have already gone with the Eucharistic revival, and now we're in year three, but
mm-hmm.
I only found out about it probably a month before going.
Okay.
So it was probably like early June. Where, like, me and my mom and my aunt and my little sister, we went to an outdoor mass. And my mom had mentioned something about, like, this pilgrimage going through. And I was like, okay, like,
yeah, yeah.
we're on the Seton route. Cool. Like, not really sure what that means.
That mean?
But, yeah, so we went to this outdoor mass. But, like, as we're walking to where they're going to have mass, you could hear a bell ringing. And I was like, what? And then, like, so everyone's watching. And this vehicle pulls up. And you can see through it. And there was... like the monstrance with Jesus in the monstrance, like in the car. We were like, what? I think my mom knew, but I was more like, what? but then they like took Jesus into the church and like these pilgrims were following. And I was like, okay. And then we had mass and everything. And then they were doing a little procession around
mm-hmm.
the outdoor stations. I was like, oh, nah, like it's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
so
thanks,
we,
no, thanks.
Right. We just ended up going home. But so like that was my guess, like my first encounter with
okay.
like what was
yeah.
happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, probably like a week later, I played pickleball with Dominique.
Yes.
And she had mentioned that like the Diocese of Greensburg was going and a group from St. Vincent were going. And I was like, oh, my gosh, like I would love to go. Like
yeah,
this would be
yeah.
so cool. And she was like, yeah, like I'll send you the information. I was like, that would be perfect. Like I would really, yeah, like to go. So she, like, yeah, forwarded me all the information, and then I ended up going with the Diocese of Greensburg,
okay,
which was so
fantastic.
Awesome. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I did not have the privilege of going. There were several monks, though,
yes.
who were there.
Yeah.
My parents were there, and just seeing pictures and stuff, what a extraordinary event and
yeah.
group, like, the masses of people that came, just
yes.
shocking. So what was, I guess... like your initial reaction, were you
yeah.
expecting anything? Were you expecting that kind of crowd or even anything?
Right. Yeah, I don't really know what I was expecting. Like, yeah, going like to the Congress, we're on a charter bus
mm-hmm.
and I'm sitting by Dominique and we're kind of like chatting and even just talking about like, well, what do we want to get out of this Congress? Mm-hmm. And neither of us really said too much. And like, this was the first time where I felt like I wasn't going in with any expectations. So like for retreats through St. Vincent or I would always go in with like this laundry list of things like, well, I want this to happen, that to happen, or like I want to feel God's presence this way. And like, mm-hmm. I had like this list of expectations really.
Yeah.
And like none of them were being met. Mm. So I think this time like going in, I was like, I don't really know what to expect like what I want to happen. Like, I just kind of want to go and see, right? Mm. Come and see, big chosen quote.
Hey, but, there you go. Yeah, nice.
Yeah. So I just kind of went, which was way better than going in with expectations, because then I just felt like God was actually there to show me why I was there.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was super good.
Yeah, I love that. Come and see, right? That's, right? That Jesus does say that. And the word for monstrance, monstrare, is just to show.
Mm.
Just like to show Jesus to us so we can see him.
Right.
And if we just come and see Jesus in the Eucharist, that should be our first inclination, right? Not, right, like you said, coming with a bunch of expectations or a laundry list of,
right.
Oh, can you please do this, or I need this, or I want that. It's like, okay, let's just come and see what Jesus does.
Yeah.
And it sounds like some awesome things. Before even Jess reached out to me, I heard, like, through the grapevine that, like, you should talk to Jess about her experience at the Eucharistic Congress, because it sounds, and it was, transformative.
That's so great.
And I know we've already talked about right. the fact that it was, but just to even to go through it again, mm-hmm. you know. You got there, and the first night and everything, just what did it look like?
We got there on Wednesday night, and we're filling Lucas Oil Stadium, so that's where the Colts play if you're an NFL fan. But, so we're filling Lucas Oil Stadium. There's like 50,000 to 60,000 people filling the stadium, and it definitely takes a while to fill. We're sitting there, and we're waiting, and it starts out with the pilgrims who traveled from all the different routes. So there was one starting from the north, and then one from, like, San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
One from Texas, and then one from Connecticut. So that was the Seton route. And they all joined in Indianapolis. So then to start the Congress, then we're all in the stadium. And the pilgrims who were traveling on the pilgrimage, they walked in all together, actually like one at a time. So one route at a time.
Yeah.
And they were carrying the saint, or I think one route was the Marian route. So they carried in a picture of Mary.
Okay.
But they would walk in. And then a video was playing on, like, the big Jumbotron. And it was just showing footage from the route. So, like, the cities and all the people and the pilgrims. And mm-hmm. it was just amazing how many people would, like, go, like, on the city streets and, like, just watch. And, like, they're definitely, like, not Catholic. And they're just like, what's going on?
Yeah.
But just, like, all the people in awe, too. And then the people that did know, and they're on their knees. Mm-hmm. And so, like, all that footage was amazing. So the pilgrims, they just kind of walked up. There was an altar on the floor space, and they just set the picture on one side, and then the next group would go up and set it on another side. So then all four sides of the altar had a picture.
Okay.
And then we started out with adoration. So then Jesus was, like, came out, and they, like, put him on the altar then, and we just started with adoration.
Mm.
And it was amazing. Like, no MC had talked yet. Nobody has spoken. Like, just the video has played, and that's just how the Congress started, was with adoration.
So that's so perfect. That's why you're there.
Right.
You're there for Jesus. And, you know, some people might be excited that, like, Bishop Barron was there, mm-hmm. or some of the sisters from Sisters of Life who were there, right?
Jonathan Rumi.
Right, yeah. You know, fictional movie TV Jesus. But actual Jesus, right? Real.
Yeah.
right in front of us. That going right into that without any like other preparation, how was that for you? And how were you, I guess, in your own faith or relationship with Christ in the Eucharist leading up to that moment?
Right. So adoration felt so long, like that first night. It was whoa. Okay.
This is how we're going. Okay.
This is how it's gonna be. All right. So we started with adoration, and like up until that point, like it was definitely like very touch and go, I feel like, with God, or just not feeling seen by him. Like, that was a big thing for me, is, like, not feeling seen by him and just really struggling with that. And not being seen by others, and just like, I don't know, just like a spiral effect of like, just turmoil, I guess, in my life.
Sure.
And so then like going to the Congress then with like no expectations, it really gave him room to work.
Yeah.
Yeah. So definitely a little shaky going into it, but feeling a lot better after the fact.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then, so first night, then moving into the next couple of days with more adoration,
right.
speakers, what are some things that stood out, whether things people said or things you reflected on in prayer?
Right. Well, yeah. So I guess the Congress, so every night there was a revival session. So everyone was gathered for the revival sessions in Lucas Oil. And then every morning started with a morning session. I think they were called the impact sessions.
Okay.
And that was like more so, like there was one in the convention center, maybe a couple actually there. And then one was like in Lucas Oil. So it just depended on like where you were in your faith life and then which session you would go to in the morning. And then there would be afternoon breakout sessions. So then you would hit those in the afternoon, which you would like to pre-sign up for those, which was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Because then you kind of knew what you were walking into.
Sure.
But and then the revival sessions in the evening. So, yeah, there were so many great speakers. And I think probably the biggest thing that really stood out to me was a talk by Sister Bethany. And she had been, like, talking and, like, this experience that she had. And just, like, she was definitely, like, having trouble and, like, just didn't know where to go. So she's sitting in church and she has, like, her head hung a little bit. And this priest walks up to her and he's like, "Sister, is Jesus asleep in your boat?" And she was like, "Yes, like, he is."
Wow.
And that really struck me because that's how I felt, like, that Jesus was asleep in my boat. Like, where was he? Like, he's making me feel all of this. Like, he's not making me, but, like, he's letting me feel this. Where is he? So, like, that hit me. And that was, like, the first or second day. And I was like, oh, my gosh. Like, so that was, I think, just a great thing to hear because now I feel like he's completely alive in control of control of my boat. So, that's one of the biggest things.
Huh. Yeah. What a great image for people who, they know in their head that Jesus is with me, but in their experience, they don't seem to feel that.
Yeah.
And especially, you know, with the Eucharist, it's like, okay, I'm told over and over and over again, that's Jesus. Jesus is right in front of me. He's right here.
Mm-hmm.
Why does everyone else seem to know and get that and to experience something from it, but not me? What is wrong? Am I doing something wrong? Is it a lack of faith, or am I unresponsive, or is it just Jesus doesn't feel like doing anything? Is he just passed out?
Does he not care? Like, my gosh.
Right.
Yeah. Those are big worries and just things that stress us out.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. But.
Okay. So you said, but now he's alive and he chartered that boat. So, okay. So obviously something changed.
Yes.
There.
Yeah.
So what happened there? How did that?
So that first night of adoration, like we had adoration, which felt forever. And then after the fact, like we all sit back in our chairs and, I feel like it was Father Josh Johnson, but it might not have been. But he was just kind of like, you know, like, let's take this time and, like, let's listen to God. Like, let's give him time to talk. And I was like, no, like, I don't want to do this.
Okay.
But it was that first night that was, I think, kind of just got the ball rolling for the rest of the week was just that, like, I did feel like he was talking to me. And just, like, something I wrote in my journal, like, I bought a journal specifically for the Congress. Mm-hmm. And that night, I was just, like, writing out something that just came to me was that, like, I'll take care of it. And I was like, okay, is this God talking to me? Like, okay. And me being my stubborn self, I was like, explain it, please. Like, is it?
Yeah.
And then it just kind of, like, sitting with that. And then he said, just, like, let go. Like, give me that control. And I was like, but I like this control. Like, I want to have control. But really, like, we have to be giving God the control. Like, he's in control of our lives. Like, we can't, he knows how it's going to go. We don't. He knows, he has this perfect plan for us, and we have to, like, let go of that, because we're just wrestling with him. Like, we're fighting him, and he's just like, let go. Like, I've got it. Like, he wants us to surrender to him, but we're scared. Like, we're broken, and we don't like to give him control. But, yeah, so it was in that moment that I was like, okay, like, I'm going to try this. Like,
wow, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So very freeing.
That is, and but a vulnerable place though.
Yes.
Because the thing about being in control is even if it's not, you know, it might feel oppressive at times. At least it seems like what we're used to, or we're comfortable with at least the bounds or the walls that we've made for ourselves. Right. It's like I know all of this, and anything outside, if I can't control it, I don't know what's going to come.
Yeah.
And God's love is unpredictable too.
Completely.
So it's, that's I totally get that. And surrender before the Eucharist absolutely is what it means to truly receive Jesus in communion. Because we're, you know, there's definitely an image. And when we see people going up to receive communion, I mean, I do this sometimes in my own head when I'm not super paying attention, or I'm just, it's, you know, the motions. Or you see just the way people approach communion. It's as if they're going up to get it,
right?
Not to receive it. Mm-hmm. And getting is an act of control. Receiving is an act of surrender.
Ooh, yeah.
So if we're going to receive communion, then we have to be in that place of you take care of it.
Right.
But otherwise, like let me do it. And I know we talked about this in our first round of this, but that there's such a lack of belief in the real presence.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly, I mean, among Catholics, we're the ones who say that we believe that this is Jesus, but like only a quarter of those who call themselves Catholic actually believe this. And I think some of that comes down to a lack of desire or lack of willingness to give over control. Mm-hmm. If I don't understand this, it doesn't make sense, or I haven't experienced it, then I don't want to. I don't want to try. I don't want to say, your will be done, here.
Yeah. That's been a very big prayer of mine, is like recently just ending my prayers with like, your will be done. Like, I definitely have a lot that like I'm asking God and like, hey, please help me with this.
Sure,
and but like ultimately, your will be done. And I'm like, okay. Father, Son, Holy Spirit, run. All right, here we go. which is a hard prayer, but it's a really nice prayer.
That's so good.
Yeah.
You talked a little bit about like that wrestling.
Mm.
So in scripture, that's an image we see as early as Genesis.
Yeah.
Jacob wrestles the angel of God, who we understand to be like Christ himself. Jacob is wrestling with God. And he's physically doing it, but it also is to reflect that how spiritually and in every sense Jacob wanted to basically have his own control, take care of everything, have his own wealth, amass everything, and then realize like without God he couldn't have anything. He was still terrified for his life. How did you, was this a place where you were able to wrestle and let God finally win the match? Or
And I guess in confession is probably where I realized that I was wrestling with God. So going to confession, definitely bawling my eyes out.
Yeah.
And the priest like slides over the tissue box and I'm like, I don't need this. Like, I'm tough. I'm okay. But like in confession, he was like, you just have to stop wrestling with God. Like, he's already won. You don't need to keep fighting with him. Like, he's got it. I was like, oh my gosh, tears. But it was definitely in confession where like I realized like I don't have to keep fighting this battle like by myself. Like, God is with me. Like, he wants my heart. Like, he has control of my life. Like, just give him your heart. Like, oh, that sounds so simple, but it's not.
No,
like,
that's
so hard. And I think too, like coming from the Congress, like I've realized more is like I always told people, like, there's this brick wall, it's double layered, it's around my heart, nobody's getting in, God's not getting in. But since the Congress, like, I feel like it's just, like, dissolved. Like, it's turned into sand, and it's just, like, blown away. Like, very gently done. And I know, like, previously we had said this too, but, like, God's a gentleman. Like, he is going to wait till we're ready, right? He's not going to rush us. He's not going to force it. Like, he's waiting for us to give our hearts to him. So it was a great experience in confession with that.
Because, Christ says, like, I stand at the door and knock, just, like, gently, you know. It's not, like, slamming on the gates or, you know, coming with a pickaxe at the brick wall to say, like, this is coming down whether you want it or not. Christ isn't invading.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to just to walk in. And yeah, I know. I still love that image of it just disintegrating into sand and just blowing away. Yeah, just because God wants to sit and dwell with us. And that's what the Eucharist does whenever we receive Jesus, is to let him just simply dwell within us. In our hearts as his heart. Because in Eucharistic miracles, whenever there has been times, and these are documented very well, and there's way more of them than people think, too, which is amazing. So we believe that, you know, the bread and wine is completely changed into the body and blood of Jesus, even though we don't see it. The accidents, what it tastes like, looks like, feels like, stays the same, but the substance, what it is, has changed. Well, there is times where the accidents also change, so it really feels, looks, tastes like flesh and blood, and it bleeds. Well, when they've done scientific tests on these things, they come back as heart tissue, cardiac tissue. And usually, they're able to study that, like, heart that is in distress. So amazing. it's mind-blowing. But the image that I frequently think about is, okay, look at my own heart. It is, you know, cut. It is bruised. It is has burns and calluses all around it. I put my own layers of walls. Mm-hmm. But when I receive Jesus, it's his heart. It just gently comes to one place and heals it. And every time I can receive communion, he's healing a little bit more. And it's not painful. It's gentle, just like you said. And it's turning my heart into his, but without taking my identity and my personality.
Yeah.
What would be then, like, so okay, you mentioned we're in the third year of this revival. What is that year, and what does it entail?
So this year is the year of mission, right? We're supposed to go out from this Congress, and the Congress is the starting line, right? It's not the finish line. So they were, very encouraging, like, go out, like, don't stay here, go.
Yeah.
A lot of the talks kind of focused on that, too, is just, like, we have to go out, we have to be disciples. And one of the things was that, like, we have to, like, go and plant the seeds, right? It doesn't matter where they fall, but we have to go and, like, plant the seeds. And then those seeds, like, if they're planted, like, we have to water them with our prayers, right? Mm-hmm. So we have to be doing that and, like, trying our best at, like, planting those seeds. One of the things, too, from the Congress is they really encouraged us to walk with one. So it's this big, like, thing to walk with one, where you're supposed to, like, discern, like, who should I be walking with? Who do I want to, like, encourage in their faith life or bring back to the church? So you pick this one person, you're praying for them, then you try to build a relationship with them. So, like, maybe you're going to get coffee, or you're going to go to a sporting event, or who knows? But you're just trying to develop that friendship or that relationship with them. And then after that, like, kind of, try to start, like, more of a vulnerable conversation, or invite them to, like, go to a Knights of Columbus cookout it is, just to kind of get them, like, involved, or just, like, maybe asking questions even. Because they said there's, like, 70 million Catholics, and if we all walked with one, that doubles.
Yeah.
So that's 140 million Catholics.
Positive takeover.
Right. You know? Exactly. And it's walk with one, because if we choose five, like, we're going to overwhelm ourselves.
Yeah.
Like, we really want to be dedicated to that one person and really help them spiritually. And, like, even some Catholics, they might need walked with two.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, just keeping all of that in mind. And, like, it's our time to go out and walk with someone.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that the witness to other Catholics, whether it's while we're in Mass or just in conversation, bringing more of it back to Christ.
Yeah.
And especially because, as you're talking about, he has it all planned, right? There's nothing he hasn't already seen, that he's walking with us along the way, that even we can do like say little things. When someone like asks me how I'm doing, sometimes I like to say like, "Oh, I'm very blessed," or like, "I've had a very anointed day." So they're just like, "Oh, it's been good,"
right?
Because that sometimes they're like, "Oh, okay," but a lot of times it just kind of gives them a little bit like, "What do you mean by that?" I'm like, "Well, it's because God transformed this here, or I was able to do this here, or I just saw a gift that He bestowed on me, and now we're able to witness to God." Yeah. And whether they're people who are like, "Oh yeah, I totally understand that," or someone who that starts to get them to scratch their head, like, "Should I think that way?" I don't know if I like that, right?
Yeah.
Just whatever you mean, like this, right? It's just putting those seeds out.
Exactly.
Whatever happens.
Yeah, yeah. Something even too from the Congress is like, it was Deacon Harold. He gave this little like testimony. It was like, he was previously in law enforcement,
okay.
And he was walking out to his vehicle, and this girl was walking to her vehicle, and he had rosaries hanging from his rearview mirror. And she goes like, "Why do you have that?" And he was like, "Oh, like, it brings me a lot of comfort." And that's where he stopped his story. He's like, she didn't ask, like, the theological background of it. She didn't ask, "Well, what do you pray on each bead?" Like, she just wanted to know, like, "Why do you have that?" And he gave her that answer of, like, "It brings me comfort. Like, I pray this because it brings me closer to Jesus." Like,
yes.
And that's probably what she was looking for. Like, she didn't want some big explanation, you know?
Yeah.
Which kind of, like, then kind of sticks with me, too, is, like, all right, so, like, if someone does ask, like, what am I going to say? Like, I don't want to overwhelm them with, like, some, like, I don't know, very, like, technical answer. But just, like, why do I do things? Like, why am I,
Yeah, have you, now that you're at a Catholic school, has any students said anything like that to you?
Yeah, actually, just this week, passing out papers, and the one girl was, like, "Oh, Miss Smith, like, I like your bracelet." And I was like, "Oh, thank you. It's my rosary bracelet." And she was just kind of like, I was like, "Yeah, okay." So the seed was planted, like, "Oh, it's my rosary bracelet, but I'm not going to say, like, much more. Like, I'll just let her think about it." And then in my classroom, too, like, so Catholic school, like, we get to pray every day before the school day starts, but then every time before class, like, so we always say a Hail Mary, and then I have a different Bible quote on my board every day. So we end our Hail Mary then with that quote, and then we like get started with class.
Yeah.
But that's been really good too, because then like the kids are like, they have to read it, and like, not that they have to, but like the participation is actually there.
Yeah.
And it's something like different every time, so it's not just like the same Hail Mary. They're getting bored. Like
we're
ending it with a different Bible verse, which I think has been good for them.
Absolutely.
But, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Scripture is always effective,
right?
So you don't have to worry. That's such a good thing, and something small but meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of what you're saying, is like our interactions, they don't always have to be, how can I sway this person to the theology right away?
Yeah,
it's those small, simple invitations.
Mm-hmm.
That's how Christ began. Oh, you know, come and see, right?
Right.
It's not a, "Oh, well, I am Messiah. Here's proof." All that. Just come and see.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in the book of Revelation, John talks about how he sees the heavens and all of the witness of the faithful and the martyrs, and it says they defeated the enemy, Satan, by the blood of the Lamb, so you know, the body and blood of Jesus in the Eucharist, and by the word of their testimony.
Mm-hmm.
So really, it is through you just sharing your experience like you're doing today, and whether it's in a long form like this, or just in a 5-minute conversation, it is our testimony that pushes Satan's power back and invites them closer to Christ.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So keep sharing your testimony. Everyone, keep sharing your testimonies. If you have ways in which God has worked in you, don't hide that.
Right.
Right. Don't. Yeah. Jesus says that. Don't
gotta
put your
share
candle
it
under the under the bed. Right. Let it shine.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And so how has Mass, so I know you like we're from it, you said you're trying to figure out, okay, you know, discerning that one person or just like little ways. How even has Mass has it been different? Have you seen the change?
Yes. So definitely, I think, like before the Congress, for sure, just going through the motions and just like trying to pay attention, you know, as best as you can, as a good Catholic. So, yeah. But since then, I feel like I'm paying attention more. Mm. And even just coming to realize that the whole Mass is a prayer. Like, not just the Our Father that we say in the middle of Mass. Right. Like, it's the whole Mass that is a prayer. So really kind of focusing on that, and like, all of this is a prayer. Like, not just this section or that section. Like, I should be paying attention to all of this.
Yes.
So that's been a big change. And then even just really realizing that Jesus is truly present in the Eucharist. Mm. That's been very, like, wild to me. Yeah. And even the one Mass, I was like, oh my gosh, like, started to tear up, like, choke up. Like, oh my gosh, like, what's wrong with me? Like, why am I ready to cry? But it was so beautiful. Like, that Mass was, like, amazing for me. Mm. So, yeah. Things have definitely been different, and like a good different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mass wise.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
I think tearing up is the proper response, you know? Right. I mean, I think, I don't know if it was Gandhi or some other like famous world leader basically said, if Catholics really believed that was Jesus, they would be crawling on their hands and knees and weeping. And I think it might also have been St. Therese saying, like, we would die of happiness if we really felt let ourselves feel the full experience, what it means to receive the Eucharist. And there are saints who have actually died simply just by receiving communion.
Oh my,
Saint,
didn't know that.
I think Imelda was her name. You can fact check me on that one, but she was a young girl and she wanted to be a nun so badly. And they finally let her enter at like 8 years old. And she hadn't even received her first communion yet, because back then you had to be like 12. But one day after Mass, she was praying, and she hadn't received communion. But then, like, the Mother Superior came in to tell her to come in for breakfast or something. And there was a host just, elevated, hovering over her head. So she went and got the priest, and the priest saw it as a sign, like, well, she's supposed to receive communion. So he took the host from above her head, gave it to her. She smiled, and they said, okay, well, we'll give you time to pray. They come back hours later. She's still kneeling there. They touch her, and she fell over, big smile on her face, dead.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's crazy story. Look it up.
if you don't believe me, learn something.
True. Yeah.
Yeah.
So your response, you know, it's not – and, yeah, I sometimes get teary-eyed. I'm like, I don't want anyone to see me, you know. Like,
exactly.
But, yeah, what a witness that can be. Someone's like, wow, is – at first, they might be like, oh, just going
is
through
she
it,
okay?
You know?
Yeah.
But if they go up and ask, like, no, it's just because this is Jesus.
Right. Like, he's truly present. Like, we are about to receive him. I feel like I don't even, like, deserve to receive him. But, like, he's there for us. Like, he wants... Yeah. It's... Yes. It's everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In some ways, we can't express everything.
Right.
It's beyond words.
Like, there's no words for it. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And that's, you know, the last words we say is, Lord, I am unworthy, but you say the word, and my soul shall be healed. And let him take care of the rest.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And what is his word is, this is my body given for you. And something I've been reflecting on a lot recently, and, you know, I'd love for you to, your thoughts on this, but that... so much of the problems in our culture are because of, like, a reversal of the gift of the Eucharist. In that, in the Eucharist, Jesus says, this is my body given up for you. But so many problems in the world are someone who either because it's in, there's something that someone has that they want, or it's that person specifically, it's, this is your body taken from me. So whether it's like some kind of sexual exploitation, or using someone as a means to gain power, or whatever it is how can I use who you are to build me up? Rather, Jesus says, let me use me to build you up.
Yeah.
I don't know what you think about that.
Right. I think, our world is definitely like real twisted. But during one of the talks by Sister Josephine Garrett, she was saying how, like, we should view each other as gift, right? Mm. God sees us all as a gift. Like, we're a gift to the world, but we don't see each other as gift just in our society and culture and just, which is something that should shift.
Yes, absolutely.
Sooner than later.
Yeah.
is, yeah, we need to see each other as gift and treat each other as a gift instead of, like, tearing each other down to, like, build up. Like,
yes,
it
yeah.
doesn't make sense. Mm. Yeah.
But we're so good at it.
Right.
Unfortunately.
Yes. Yes. The devil loves to pry in and...
Yeah. What's a... I'm putting you on the spot here, but what's a way that you have been able to maybe grow in that, to see mm-hmm. someone as a gift? Or is that still something you're working on, Ooh. But you're trying to
yeah.
figure out?
I feel like even just in simple ways, too, like going to Walmart, it's now almost like a little game, but like I try to make eye contact with people and then smile or like just kind of crack a joke like, oh, excuse me, like yeah. just need this. Like, I don't know, just kind of being weird and awkward. But like you get a reaction or yeah. like, I don't know. I feel like people just kind of like stare down. They don't want to make eye contact with you. They don't want to talk to you. But I don't know, like being able to like then receive a smile back, it's like, okay. Like, maybe I made their day better for 10 seconds.
Yeah.
But, so I guess just trying to have an impact like that even, or just, yeah. Like, that. I know the devil's at work, too. And to try to lessen him, like, just try to bring Christ to other people.
Yes.
Just even in small ways. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because going back to something you said, like, at the beginning was mm-hmm. some real struggle you had before going to the Conquerors was feeling seen.
Yeah.
By God, right?
Yeah.
Well, one of the greatest ways for us to be able to show people that God sees them is to do it through us.
Right.
Trust me, if you think I see you, the Father sees you 10 million, infinitely Way, more
yes.
than I see you.
Right. Yeah. And like believing it, like it's something really hard to believe.
Yeah.
And the devil wants to throw in the lies and make us wrestle with it and then wrestle with God. And it's just this awful spiral.
Yeah.
But like we have to really know, like, what voice are we listening to? Right. And whose voice are we believing? Whereas like God's telling us truth and goodness and the liar, the devil is telling us lies and he wants us to believe everything that we're questioning. And it's like, who are we going to listen to? And something too from the Congress was just like, don't dialect with the devil, right? So, like, I think it was Sister Josephine Garrett again, but she said that Eve dialected with the devil, and that distorted our image of ourselves, of others, and of God.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
So we shouldn't be talking to the devil. Like, leave that to God. Like, he's got it. We just have to give him that control.
Yes.
And he'll deal with it. He'll take care of him.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keep your eyes fixed on him.
Mm-hmm.
That's... when St. Peter walked out of the boat, it was when he was looking at Jesus that he was able to walk on water. But when he looked at something else away, it's when he started to sink.
Right.
And whatever those waves are, whether they're lies, they're temptations, they're uncertainties or, you know, worries that we have that we want to control, whatever they are.
Even shame and guilt.
Absolutely. Like, oh, yeah. Those are so powerful.
Yes. Yeah.
And especially in that place of, okay, I'm seeing Jesus, he's seeing me, but... I'm ashamed that he's seeing me right now. So maybe I want to look away.
Right. Maybe I want to hide.
Yeah.
Right. Mm. I don't want to be seen.
But his gaze is never condemning. Right. He in Scripture says his heart was moved with pity when he looked upon the crowds.
Yeah.
And when he looked on the rich young man, it says he looked on him and loved him. It's the same thing. And Carlo Acutis says, you know, when we go outside in front of the sun, we get tan. When we sit in front of the Eucharist, we become saints.
Yeah.
And that's because it is love that makes us saints, nothing else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Something bringing up saints. So the last Eucharistic Congress was 83 years ago. I guess National Eucharistic Congress.
Which is crazy. I would have thought it was way sooner than that.
Right. I mean, there was an international one, I think, in 1976 in Philly.
Okay.
But, yeah, national-wise, like, it's been 83 years, which is crazy. But at that Congress, like, actually, maybe it wasn't that Congress. Maybe it was the international one. But anyways, so like Mother Teresa was there and so was Pope John Paul II. So like these people who are now saints, it's like, oh my gosh. So then at this Congress, I was like, oh my gosh, like, is there going to be a saint here? But like, we're all called to be saints.
Yes.
And then Chris Stefanik said, like, what if we all just pretend to be saints for a couple of years? Like, how would our world, like, Ooh, how would the world wow. change?
No
I was
kidding.
Like, wow, like, I'll try it.
Yeah,
like,
right? Oh,
sign me up. Yeah, so that was even just kind of challenging or motivating. Like, what if we did all act like we were saints? Like, how would we treat each other?
Mm. Yeah, acting as that I am called, I'm a saint.
Yeah.
Now, and then that you're a saint.
Mm-hmm.
What a different relationship. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, one of my more powerful experiences in adoration, and I think I shared this in my vocation testimony, but it was at a Sikh conference.
Oh, okay.
And in adoration, I really, like you said, felt kind of God just moving in you with mm-hmm. with words that definitely didn't originate from you, you know, because
yeah.
they're either counterintuitive to what you normally would think, or they mm-hmm. just, they're too good to really be, you know, your own.
Exactly, yep.
And it was, I was really truly seeing and feeling for the first time that this is Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And the love that comes from the Eucharist is just overwhelming. And while it's for everyone, it is yet also for me. As my spiritual director says, Christ loves us all equally, but as if he was loving us all uniquely. So I was really experiencing that, and I just kind of in prayer asked, like, what should I do with this?
Mm-hmm.
And the response is, if you love everyone as if they themselves were the Eucharist. Like, see the Eucharist in that person. Because if you love me, you've seen the love I'm giving you, you want to love me back, right? What about the person that you don't feel love from? Do you really want to love them back? Probably not.
Right.
But if you see me in the Eucharist in that person,
then
it's going to change it.
Right.
Like, and that's what, to see them as a saint, to act like a saint would be doing.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
It's just a good connection. So thanks. Yeah, that was,
right.
That's so good.
Good.
So what would be then, like, kind of as a close, like, how would you encourage someone who may be still on that place of uncertainty, maybe
yeah.
like the way you were? Or they're not sure what their next step should be.
Yeah.
What would you say?
I think the first thing is just to be patient with yourself. I think I find it very hard to be patient with myself,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, being patient with yourself, being patient with God. He's there. We just have to kind of like tap into him, lean into him, and like, he's there waiting for us. Right. And then like, once we're like, I guess, being more patient with ourselves and everything, like even just like trying to let go, right?
Mm-hmm.
Give him more of the control, give him the reins, which is way easier said than done.
Yeah.
But even partially, or just like every once in a while, like just to kind of, yeah, like give him that control. And I guess even to kind of grow in that, like praying, right?
Yeah.
Like I recently got the Hallow app. It's amazing.
Yeah,
like, it's so good.
It's great.
But like even just setting a routine in the app, it's like, I get a notification. It's like, time to pray. I'm like, this is great. Perfect.
Mm.
Like, I wasn't doing anything anyways. Like,
yeah.
This is a great reminder. So, yeah, like praying. And my spiritual director, he even said about like perpetual adoration chapels.
Yes.
And I was like, I didn't know these were a thing. Like,
yeah, there's fire.
So, like, I went to one the one night. I was like, this is like, and there were people in it. I was like, what are you people doing? Like, it's 9 o'clock at night. Like,
yeah.
Go home. But no, it was so good to see other people in the chapel. So yeah, like seek out even an adoration chapel, and be with him. Like, yeah, like you can be present with him.
Yes.
You know, so.
Yeah, absolutely. Be with
yeah.
him. There's no other solution that's going to work.
Right.
Like that.
Yeah. Be close.
In, I think it's Mark's account of the calling of the disciples, it says he chose 12 to first be with him. And to then go out. So you said, right, we're supposed to go, or in that evangelization
right.
to go out.
Yep.
But unless we're with him first, we're not going to be able to do that well.
Oh.
And maybe that being with him is going to take a long time.
Maybe
yeah. we're called to be with him for the next couple of years.
For sure.
But there's no way that that's wasted time.
Nope. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all good. Yeah. Even, too, is like, I think taking those opportunities where you can, like, spread his word, or just like kind of encourage someone. It's like when God opens that door, like start talking, right?
Yeah.
Encourage others, like yeah, because maybe they're just like questioning it, or like they're like on the fence about something, but your words of encouragement could just get them there.
Yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, whenever God opens a door, like use it.
Rush into it.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
awesome. Well, thank you again, Jess.
You're
you
know, so welcome.
Yeah, she came. She drove back out here after all of this debacle of, you know, my ineptitude. So, and I really do believe it's because, like, this is so important to
right.
you.
Right, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Definitely couldn't let it go.
So, thank you for your witness.
Yeah.
Thank you for, yeah, your trust. Yeah, and you know, if you were maybe at the Eucharistic Congress, or if you've had powerful experiences in adoration with the Eucharist, we'd love to hear them. Drop a comment below. Glory stories are always great. Mm-hmm. Continue to share that testimony. Also, if maybe you're in that place that Jess was saying, like you're questioning or you're unsure, mm-hmm. And you just need prayer, also, we love to pray for you. Yes. So please put that in there. I will. I know Jess will pray yep. for you guys. My brothers will. You know, my family, they read those comments because they want to offer this stuff up in prayer too. So please do that. If this episode was helpful or encouraging for you, yeah, please, if you could, it'd be great. Leave a like, you know, subscribe. Share this with someone, particularly if you think their relationship with Jesus could be strengthened or growth in a relationship of knowing him in the Eucharist. So, yeah. If you want to keep on watching more of our videos, there will be a link here to podcast episodes and to our most recent video. There'll be one at the bottom. So, yeah, thank you again, cool. Jess.
Yeah, of course.
Have a wonderful day. God bless.